Welcome to the Hoban Minute, a podcast that will shift your perspective on the business, politics, and culture of the hemp and marijuana industries. I'm your host, Xavier Jaye. It's 420 somewhere, so let's dive in. Hey, everybody. This is your host, Xavier, and I'm joined today, as I always am, by Mr. Hoban himself. How are you doing today, Bob?
I'm doing great. It's good to be here. It's the holiday season. It's upon us, and we're in the thick of it, Xavier.
It is.
I hope you're ready.
It's been full swing, we'll say. We just spent a good 45 minutes decorating our office here and excited to wrap up the year with some positivity and some cheer. Today, we are joined by none other than Ermine Nomir, the mother of medicine. How are you today, Ermine?
I'm doing really well.
Well, Ermine, thanks so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show today. I think we first crossed paths with you on the SB 22205 task force here in Colorado regarding intoxicating hemp.
No, that's exactly it. And I was really impressed, I think, with you guys in a couple positions that you took, because when I was doing some of our research on it, there was something about interstate commerce and that clause that we were really looking into. And when we saw some other, or really some legal minds doing it, we were like, oh, we're not completely crazy. So I was excited and really pumped.
Yeah, there's some interesting provisions they're trying to do and working around that interstate piece explicitly, which is fascinating given the context of the cannabis industry. Hopefully we'll see that all squared away here in the new year. We won't divulge our position here on the podcast, but it'd be fascinating to see kind of what the task force does end up coming to as far as that policy recommendation. Having crossed paths on this intoxicating hemp cannabinoid task force, why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey here and kind of what has led you to getting involved in the cannabis industry and the hemp industries and what you're doing currently in those spaces?
And I will start everything off by just giving people a little bit of an insight that I think the term for me is something called like neurodivergent. Smart, matter of fact, driven, a lot of things, but really just trying to get to the heart of the matter. I'm an immigrant from Cameroon. So that last name is, it's tribal in respect and how it goes. And my grandma is really the medicine woman and the griot. She keeps our family story going and people like her generation after generation. But what happened was I was working in corporate America in Texas. This was about, almost a decade ago. Well, no, it was a decade ago now. And when I was out in Texas, I had my Me Too moment. And it was one of the most challenging and brutal experiences of my life. And I ended up moving on. There was settlements and things that, you can't go into too much about it. But what I can say is from that moment, I was just in a lot of pain. And we look at it now and it's trauma, whether it's PTSD or any other sorts of just abuse or trauma, it's how do you handle it going forward? And for about 6 or 7 years, I was miserable at how I handled it. I was mad at the world. I was mad at everyone and everything in it. And I looked at my life as so unfair. And in the process of that, I realized I got to get to a better sense, or at least can I get back to my old self? There really was no doing that. So what could I do to get to my new self? And I had tried medicines like an antidepressant or all this different stuff. Nothing worked. Once in a while, it worked for like 30, 60 days, but it really didn't have any staying power. And I'd, go down to a blithering bumskull once in a while. And then I started reaching out for alternative medicines and everything from marijuana to psilocybin to all of these different things. I won't go too much into some of them, but what I will tell you, and that was the excitement behind like Delta 8 and some of these other products, is it allowed the anxiety and some of the challenges I have from like that ongoing feeling. I didn't even know that, I didn't know what anxiety was. And so the help that it provided me and allowed me to get to a position where I not only was I not angry anymore, but I forgave. And I forgave from a place of like empowerment and really wanting the other people who were in a really you know, or created a really tough situation, I wasn't mad at them anymore. And I wanted them to see life that it could be. And I wanted actually good things for them. It was like, who prays for that, for someone that hurt you so bad? But that was the healing that I started to get from alternative medicines. And that's why everything about me and who I am, and it's even funny because my mom finally told me what my last name meant, that mother of medicine, this past year. I was like, what? What now you tell me? But it's okay, because that's just how things kind of flow out. So the impetus for me is really in self-healing to get involved with these alternative medicines and try and understand why you would block something as a government or any other type of agency or industry that has the ability to help people heal, that has the ability to help people forgive, right? Because if that's what it's helping people do, how much of better could society be once we all start forgiving each other for those transgressions or things that happen and occur in a negative way? And how much can we all move forward when we're not carrying some of that luggage and dead weight? So yeah, I'm super passionate about this. And I, given that sense of where I'm coming from, I will not be stopped in everyone having access to this.
Well, that's quite an ambitious goal, Ermin, we certainly support you there. But let's talk a little bit about, all right, so that's how you came upon, you know, these particular topics, and obviously, you know, the genesis of your name, I think that's really cool and that means a lot. But tell us how that transitioned into a business opportunity for you. How did you identify the opportunity and what did it ultimately become for you? Because, you know, I always say that I think the best ideas are driven when you can actually put some business behind it, because then you've got more momentum. So if you can marry the concept of, like I said, liberalizing, making plant-based medicines available to the masses, but marry that to a business concept, I think that's truly how you achieve things in life, because those two things get married together. If you do one, it falls flat. If you do the other one, it's oftentimes falls flat as well. But when you marry those two things together, I think that's where you gain some traction. What's your perspective on that? And how did you channel this into a business opportunity?
That's great. So one of the things that you guys don't know about me as well is I've had a boutique advertising agency for about, well, a decade. And inside of there, we've done a lot of work for clients in the cannabis industry and helped them sell for a lot of money. And what happened was we decided at one point, I have a nonprofit, and some of the folks in it were like, hey, it'd be interesting to see how people of color get into an industry that has been so brutal to us, that has locked us up. Like, why are all these people making billions and we're still getting locked up? Because that was really a lot of the case a couple of years ago. So I said, let's do what we usually do. Let's do a feasibility study, right? Let's understand what's going on in this industry and what it would take to enter it. And at the time, Sarah Woodson had really put a lot of effort into social equity. And so we did a lot of research in the Colorado social equity market. And lo and behold, we were so excited going in. We got like our social, you know, equity certifications and took the classes and did all this and went, wait a minute. There's no way to make money in this industry. There's no way to even make $100,000 a year, given how redlined, greenlined, weedlined, whatever we're calling it, this industry has done to keep a group of us out. And we were shocked by that because we thought, oh, you get your social equity license, you can just go open a location. And you can't, because it has to be, it can't be within 2,500 feet of a school or a church or a liquor store, or, I mean, there's like 20 different things that are outstanding, and that's just for Denver. I mean, and then there's some locations that won't accept marijuana, as you guys saw with like Colorado Springs. So then we were like, okay, well, maybe we can't own a dispensary. Well, what can else? We can do delivery, but you have to connect to a dispensary to be able to do delivery. And the way that it's been worded in this industry, and it's horrible, is they have literally created an environment where social equity people are once again being sharecropped, where you can't go directly as a social equity person to a manufacturer and say, hey, can I deliver your stuff through like a warehouse model or, you know, some of the hemp products that we're talking about, and just get it to consumers because you have to go through a dispensary first. That'd be great, except for there's no way to get a dispensary. And the reason we were shocked was like, wait a minute, didn't they know this when they created these laws? Like, I could have stood back and said, yeah, that's not going to work. And maybe some people did, and that was the intention. So after we looked at all of that, we said, well, where is the opportunity? And prayed about it, because I'm big on prayer. And I met three people when I went to a terpene store. One of them is our current manufacturer, but there was two other people. One I couldn't trust, you know, any further than I can throw them. Another one never got back to me, but Andy at Buy CBD Oil Online did and said, hey, yeah, we can, let's figure something out. And so because we had this lane that was federally legal, we went, wait a minute, why are we going to waste $100,000 in all of these costs associated with building out an illegal structure, federally illegal? Why are we going to waste money on cars and insurance, you know, all the things that it takes, hundreds of thousands of dollars to get that up and running, when this one costs $100 for a certification, or not even that, right? And we can build out the infrastructure because I have an ad agency, right? It was like, let's build out a platform where other people can play. And we've done all these marketing for all of these marijuana companies. Why don't we just execute it for people who are on our platform in the federally legal side? Maybe, and I don't, you know, we created one brand for us, but I don't want to compete with people that are on my platform. So we'll just keep that as kind of the generic brand on the platform, and we won't create any other ones. And so when we started doing that, people were like, wait a minute, what's going on? Like, I can be of color and not, and maybe only have $50,000. And not only can you guys help me create the brand, package it, help us get the insurance, help us with, like, we have UPS. They've done a great deal for people. Help us get financing for the $50,000. Help us get all these different things. And you'll give me a platform, and you'll give me the marketing communications, and you'll do all this. And that $50,000 can include my initial order of products. They were like dumbfounded. They're like, do I spend it $100,000 or $250,000 in the regulated market, or spend $50,000 proving my concept in your platform and then decide where I want to go from there? And that's really the vision of, like, entrepreneurship. Let's get people moving. Let's get them to work. Let's get them to work for themselves. And then if they have something that's innovative, if they have a process that works, if they have all these stuff, help them grow, but get out of their way. And we know that there's going to be some that are wildly successful, and we know that there's going to be some that just don't make it. But let's not be the reason that they're not making it because they've been blocked by redlining or greenlining, whatever we're calling it. Let's make it because what every business should be judged on, they were good or they weren't. And that is really what drove us in here. And so I put a sizable amount into creating the platform. We've gotten about 5 brands on it. We have 13 brands now, or 14, sorry, today we said 14, that are in the hopper, that are in the process of getting 2 to 3 of their products minimally on the platform. But here's, like, so exciting, is I was mad as a mom because in California, one of my family members lives there, and they got some... a drug that for whatever reason sent him to the hospital. This is marijuana, sent him to the hospital. It was a nightmare. And while I was going through that process, I said, if I were to do this agency industry and create it like a mom wanted, what would I do? And that's what we put in the website. 21 plus verification the whole way through. We put all of our packaging childproof. We put a product on there. You guys will start seeing it called High Be Gone. And that product allows that if you've had an overdose or too much or whatever, you drink that. And I don't know, it's a kind of one of those like 5-hour energy shot size. Within 30 minutes, your high is gone. And I would love to introduce you to that team that created it. But we're even attaching it, and we're considering this with some of our products for certain states that are not, that don't have like a regulated market at all. We've allowed to have higher dosages in those states, and some that are seriously high dosages. We want to make sure that every time you buy a product like that, you get a High Be Gone with you just in case. So, and then we did the 21 verification as you order. We did verification as the credit card type. We even have, depending on what you order, you have to sign for it, right? And somebody over a particular age has to sign for it because of the way the shipping station and all of the aspects of it work. So this isn't just a thing where, like, it's going to the delivery and who knows who's ordering it. No, we know exactly who, because you're going to have to take a picture of yourself and some other things as you go through the process. Mm-hmm. We also made it so that all of the brands, they have to meet our profile. And our profile is really hard in that there's certain vendors that you can go through to be tested. One of the things people don't talk about in the marijuana industry, and it's kind of a quiet kept secret, and I won't go too much into it, is there's some real challenges with testing. There's inconsistencies, and let's say that, you know, they just don't have all the same equipment. So you get one reading here, or a different reading somewhere else. And then there's some pay to play in there, which is really frustrating. I was going
to say, and you know where to go to get the right results. Not you, exactly. But people in the industry.
Right. But exactly. And so what we said is we're not playing with that anymore. We started talking with some FDA approved labs. So we want to get down that path. And then we know two or three labs in the area for sure in Colorado that we know to trust as well that aren't doing those games. And the way that we've also done it is every KS product by every person, we will snatch it right from under there and we will send it to testing ourselves and see, you know, how that's going with an independent FDA level tester. So if they're not getting very similar results, we have a problem. And so those are the ways that even we're dealing with some of this. And then what we did, which was critical, and you guys don't know this yet, and it's not out yet, so I won't speak too much on this, but all of the executives that are on our team, they're Fortune 500 people, Fortune 50 in most cases. So we do have people from consumer packaged goods. We do have people from the spirits world. We have people from banking and financial services. We have people from products that you would see like at Whole Foods and stuff like that. And so we put together an incredible team to help lead this, an incredibly diverse team. We have incredibly diverse partners from agencies and, you know, contractors throughout the process. But like when you look at some of the first people we have on our platform, we have women-owned companies. We have Black-owned, Hispanic-owned, Jewish, white male, and small business in those aspects of it. Because we're not saying that this is an environment that we want to exclude anybody, but you got to come to play and you got to come to build a business and build it from just the hard work that you know that it takes. Like there's no handouts or hand ups here. It's just getting it done. But we are going to be inclusive and we're going to focus that message around really being a service for the community that we built this platform and our entire ecosystem the way we wished the government would have, which goes back to, from my perspective, as I get older, I get a little bit more, I learn a little bit more, and I learn that if we're willing in business to do the right thing, there's no need to have government too much involved.
Amen on that. And that's what I was going to note is, you know, ultimately, if we sit back and wait for the government to lead, then the government's not good at that. That's not what the government does. The government is there to sort of do the will of the people, in my perhaps not so humble opinion. But at the end of the day, if they don't create regulation, that doesn't mean we need to clamor for regulation, because when they regulate things, that creates standards and it creates a finite structure. And that finite structure tends to favor larger enterprises and more resource enterprises. Yep. Whereas at least in this environment, with a little bit of ambiguity, it affords more opportunity in the business sector. And ultimately, when the FDA comes around and does issue rules and regulations, that's another story. But you know, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the podcast is I do love your energy and I love your enthusiasm and your passion. And generally speaking, but talk about your marketing background for a moment. Let's talk about how, you know, we look at hemp derivatives, right? Is there a hemp industry or is it a CBD industry? How do you market these products? How do you talk about these products? Do consumers understand if they buy CBD, well, that's a hemp derivative. If they buy Delta 8 or Delta 9 from hemp, that these are products from hemp. Do they care about hemp? Is hemp sort of a worn out old term that consumers will embrace? And do you have to go more specific to the actual compounds that are derived therefrom? How do you market and brand these things?
Okay. So what I can say from a marketing and branding perspective is you asked a ton of questions. When we start from the big picture, what do they know about hemp? What do they think about it? Is there's actually much more positive association with the word hemp than marijuana. And we thought that was really profound, that people see hemp as like more of a chill, not like get you high product, but a product about wellness. We didn't expect that. So that was where we really got excited. In terms of how do you market it, what we found is there's upper funnel activities, mid funnel and lower funnel. That's not rocket science. But how we communicate it depends on each market that we're in. So we have customer segmentation right now. We have about 16 different customers that we're segmenting, and we're really focused on 3 to 4 of those at launch and in 7 different states. That's where we're focusing all of our efforts. Actually, that's not true. It's 7 different markets in 3 different states. So inside of that, let's just say one of the markets is Florida. What we do is we look at a market, and let's say another one is Minnesota. And the reason that these are really important to understand is we have to understand the persona and the archetypes of people kind of associated with those different states. Because we might get an overall message. I'm just making it up because I'm not going to tell you some of the great marketing that we're doing. But we might get a message where we need to message about, let me think about something for this industry. We need to message just about Delta 8, okay? And inside of messaging about Delta 8, I might put out some communications, which is, what is Delta 8? There's reasons where I want to do that and reasons where I don't. It's actually not really smart to do in a digital realm because it will start dinging you and not allow things to go through. But let's just say I'm doing this in a traditional, like out-of-home messaging. And I wanted to do, what is Delta 8? And if I want to position things towards someone in Florida, I need to speak towards their individualism. I need to speak towards Don't tread on me. What is that?
Texas.
I always forget the.
I believe it's Texas.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's Texas, but it's also this notion of like more libertarian.
Oh yeah. For
views
sure.
More of like, it's exactly. Now, if I'm in Minnesota, I need to take more of an approach that's a little bit more aligned with like Protestant type messaging out there. And what I'm looking for is things where this might be something that is more appropriate for the soul. Or I need to make sure that whatever I'm messaging, Christ would not come back and say, no, you don't need to be using that, right? And those are little aspects that I need to keep aligned as we're going through all of the United States. I don't know if you guys remember, but there used to be this map that came out that showed like kind of how North America was like flushed out through like religion. And these are where the Quakers were, and these are the Protestants, and these are the Methodists, and this is whatever, the Baptists. And a lot of that, you know, kind of that mindset is still holding true today. So those are some of the aspects that we keep in mind. But even then, we do further demographic and psychographic messaging or modeling when we look at each one of these and really decide what is the overarching model we're going to put through. Because what I felt like over time is that the traditional marijuana industry has been not willing to spend on marketing and advertising to create brands that can sustain and not become commoditized. Because they were printing money at one point. But once it started getting really competitive, instead they couldn't rely on things like brands to ensure that their pricing stayed up. They had to just constantly do the the pricing war, because they never built that infrastructure that, you know, for the brand. What we're saying is we already know that that's coming, right? So let's build brands that stand for something, that have a certain level of, it's not good, just meet certain levels, right? From quality
and the cleanliness, exactly. Right?
Yes.
The
names, and colors, right? Even the employees, right? All sorts of things. Thank you for helping
messaging.
Me
know,
get
course,
through that.
Of course.
Exactly. And then from there, you can go out and build something with staying power. So the most important thing we know right now in this industry is that last mile. How do you touch the consumer and ensure that you own a space that the consumer can buy from? And so what we're saying as the hemp and social equity is, we need to break up a little bit of this monopoly, right? Where there's only a few group of jokingly like oligarchs that are controlling where the consumer is getting their product. Because it is no good for the consumer if they are limited to 20, 30, to, I don't know, however many dispensaries, individual ones there are in the state, and they keep going, the smaller ones out of business and the bigger ones buy them up and get bigger. So what we're saying is we've got to create better options for consumers, and this is the way to do it. Yeah. We've been lied to from the industry. Delta 8 and Delta 9, there's nothing wrong with them, right? They're just like, oh my God, the kids are, you know, going to get sick. They're going to die. No, that's not what any research has said, right? And so that's where I start to get mad and not believe in the industry anymore. You lied to me once, you'll never lie to me again because I'm going to stop believing you. And this has consistently happened. And it's why I look at these task force, I look at these groups and I go, is it just me or, you know, like what is really going on here? Because I
can't believe.
It does
seem like we haven't really learned from history, right? It's like we're kind of walking in the steps. You know, it's interesting what you said about the original, I think the original reason why this industry was created is because cannabis was illegal, right? And now here we are, you know, putting this red tape.
Final legal.
Right, exactly. And we're fighting kind of that double battle. It's very
the new war on drugs.
Right, the new war on drugs. And it's kind of cannibalism. It is incredible. Right. And that's something that we're, you know, obviously working with you on this task force here in Colorado. All right, so... Ermin, where can people find you if they're looking to connect with you, take advantage of your marketing and advertising services, or learn more about, you know, the cannabinoid equity incubator, it seems that you're dedicating yes. yourself to. Where can folks find you?
Cannabinoid incubator. Just said I'm hilarious.
Like
persona.group, www.persona.group. Reach out to us and we will, you know, we have a small team that would love to help walk through some innovative ideas. And as it relates to if you want to start buying some of this amazing product, the best way is to go to truverte.com. That's TRUVERTE.com. Unfortunately, you cannot do that in Colorado and some other states. You know, I think we're only in about 38, 39 states. But we would love for you to just check it out and let us know, because we do have one thing happening in 2 weeks. You will see the launch of a process where you will ask what you're looking for and say what you're not looking for, and it'll walk you through and make recommendations for the ideal product given your wants and needs.
Nice. A guided shopping process. That's definitely Yeah,
that's exactly it.
Fantastic. Yep. We'll check that out in a couple of weeks. Bob? Any last thoughts here?
I was just going to say, Hermine, thank you for joining us. We enjoyed the lively discussion. Appreciate your background and your approach to this whole thing. And, you know, it's always wonderful to connect with someone who views plant-based medicine as a necessary component to life, where it just seems like such a foreign concept to mainstream America. And that's something that certainly we in this industry are dedicated to. And when you apply mainstream marketing, branding, and business principles to this industry, which is a lot less common than you think, you're bound to continue to experience success. So thank you for joining us. It's been our pleasure, and we look forward to staying in touch. And let's see what happens with intoxicating cannabinoids from hemp in Colorado.
Thanks for joining us for another enlightening conversation. If you liked what you heard, hit that subscribe button to get all future episodes fresh out of the studio. Suggestions for topics or guests for the show, please send them to hello@bobhoban.com. And as always, thanks to Benzinga for powering the Hoban Minute.